One of my nieces decided somewhere around 15 or 20 years ago that there ought to be a write-up of the shrub of my line. And so she went about collecting the dates, the facts about our family, that is, about my parents' family, actually, and asked each of the families to write something about their history. Well, this is what they asked me to write about some of the time that Lowell mentioned. And I have chosen to start this in around 1940, when the World War II was started and lasted until 1945. Now, through the efforts of some church leaders, provision was made for conscientious objectors to war to do work in areas of national importance in civilian public service rather than in the military. There were those who were conscientious objectors were drafted the same as military men, but under a different classification. In 1943, six Amish youth from our church, the church to which I belonged then, were summoned from northern and north central Wisconsin to meet six buses and travel to the induction center in Milwaukee. As we got closer to Milwaukee, it seemed the youth became increasingly nervous and the Amish youth became kind of the butt of their jokes, their whatever they wanted to do. That evening, in a huge room, an Army official gave a talk of which I remember only these words: "Unless you look like you came out of a cave in some north woods, you will likely get along quite well in the Army." I suppose he saw Amish people there. The next day, as we were getting our physical exams, at one point, the doors were closed, and others were rerouted, while the two doctors kindly asked me about our faith. I do not remember my answers. But as I left the room, they told me, "God bless you." No one in our church was drafted into service. In 1946, my parents were ready to turn their farm over to one of their children. My brother and I were still at home and unmarried, so if we had taken over, it would have meant that my mother could not really retire. So it was that my sister Fanny and her husband, Joost Hochstetler — by the way, that word Hochstetler is the way the name was pronounced in Wisconsin, in our area, both by the Amish and the non-Amish. And their children, Melvin and Phoebe, moved back to Wisconsin from Kelowna, Iowa, to take on the home farm. Harley and I went looking for jobs elsewhere at other farms, trying out a job in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, in the sugar bush, but cutting logs to rebuild a barn that had burned down. Then a friend and I went to Kelowna, Iowa, to husk corn and started doing ordinary farm work instead. Youth meetings among the Amish were fairly new then and were not favorably looked upon by everyone. I attended many of them. In December of 1948, the idea of formal voluntary service was quite new and hardly existed among individual church groups. I attended a voluntary service orientation class at MCC headquarters at Akron, Pennsylvania. Most of us who attended had a farm background, so we had study and class periods for a half day and were assigned to various hands-on jobs the other half of the day. It was a time when many fellows our age knew very little about other parts of the Anabaptist family. While we were there, by mid-January of 1949, a Marvin Bartle from Halstead, Kansas, and I were on our way to Camp Landon near Gulfport, Mississippi, for our voluntary service assignments. The work did not fit Marvin as well, and he was soon reassigned to Akron, Pennsylvania, to drive a semi-truck for MCC. And while he was there, he met a former Amish girl, Martha Stultzfus, whom he married, and they have been members of a relatively conservative Mennonite church. About 5 years ago, I saw their names and wrote to them in the Mennonite Weekly Review and found he was indeed the Marvin that I had met in the voluntary service orientation many years ago. The program at Camp Landon was a continuation of somewhat of civilian public service. Of the work we did was working with the County Health Department on hookworm control. I think that was the same thing that that David also worked at in CPS. It expanded into helping families in need, into visiting families with singing, Bible readings, in having religion classes in black public schools, some of which were very primitive, small, and poorly built, into having a group of young people come as a summer unit to help in vacation Bible schools. I had my first experience in teaching in a Bible school at a black school in Turkey Creek, just outside of Gulfport. This was in times before the integration of whites and blacks. Elizabeth and Mary Miller were two Amish girls from Kansas who were part of the summer unit that year. One of the first times that we met with some interest in each other was when a group of young people, after church, went to watch the moon shining across the Gulf of Mexico on a pier in Gulfport. We usually went to church at Wayside Mennonite Mission. Occasionally, however, we went to the older Mennonite church, Gulf Haven. Many of us who were part of a singing group led by Pastor Ed Miller frequently sang at the local hospital and the county jail. Several times we chartered a boat to go for a cruise on the Gulf. Ping pong was a favorite pastime, or we played ball with the black boys of Turkey Creek. There was an Ed, somebody, a former CPSer. Do you remember anybody by the name of Ed? From Philadelphia. It was an Ed, and I've forgotten his last name. And he liked to come out on Saturdays to Camp Landon to visit and to play chess with his brother in Philadelphia. He would set up the chessboard properly, make him move, and write his brother. A week later, he received a letter from his brother saying which chessman he had moved. The game was not yet done when I left Gulfport. Several times we went to visit Mennonite churches in Bruton, Alabama, or Acres, or DeSalamins, Louisiana. Henry Traig was pastor at Acres then. Some of you remember Henry Traig, I'm sure. On Saturday evening, George Reno from that church asked if I wanted to go with him when he went to check his fish lines. We were out until midnight and spoke very little. The next morning, at 15 minutes before Sunday school starting time, George met me at the door and asked me to teach Sunday school. I excused myself, saying I didn't even know what the lesson was. "No problem," he said, "the people will help you." I did, and they did. I lost track of George until after Hurricane Katrina, I saw that he was a pastor of a church south of New Orleans, and Mennonite Disaster Service were helping rebuild there. Occasionally, I would go fishing with Jim Rainier, a former CPS Methodist who stayed in Gulfport as a teacher. Do you remember Jim Rainier? By the end of the summer, Ray Horst from MCC asked if I would serve in Germany. And thus, in the fall of 1949, I was on board the Dutch ship New Amsterdam, sailing from New York to Europe. There were other MCC personnel on board, among them Oreo Miller, CEO of MCC at that time, and Amos Horst, a Lancaster Conference bishop, who was going to visit missions in Africa. Each morning, we had a half-hour worship service on the ship. A favorite pastime for me was to play shuffleboard on the deck. Another highlight of the trip was to have a guided tour of the ship's engine rooms and the huge, very long shafts slowly turning the propellers that moved the ship. After 6 days, we disembarked at Havre, France. When we met, and taken to Amsterdam, Holland, and then to Espelkamp, Germany, which would be my home. Our first home there was in a former wooden army barrack. We did our clothes washing in a community laundry. The washing machine was electric, but had to be cranked to start it, and sometimes it would start just as hard as some of our gas engines do. The buildings in the town proper were made of masonry work and stuccoed, and its roofs were tile, and they were camouflaged in green and brown so that they could not be seen from the air. They were well hidden in a small evergreen forest. It was said that the British Army had passed the town in their invasion of Germany 2 weeks before they knew it was there. My job was to help in altering the buildings into two dwelling homes for refugees. Later, we also built outside buildings so that the families who moved in would no longer need to keep their goat and chickens in a room in the house. We also helped dig basements by hand and helped build new houses. The German Welfare Department usually decided who were to be the recipients of our aid. Appreciation was shown in many ways. Something to treasure was a plaque with the words, "Was ihr getan habt, einer unter diesen geringsten Brüdern, das habt ihr mir getan," from Matthew 28:40. Another treasure was the time we were invited to a refugee's temporary home for an appreciation supper. They lived in a barn, and while we ate, horses were looking at us from their stalls. A family who became especially good friends to me was the town shoemaker. Before I left, I was invited to their home, only they did not tell me beforehand that it was also the father, Willy Grill's, birthday. They did not want me to feel obligated to bring a gift. In 1990, when we were with a tour group in Western Europe, we went back to Espelkamp, and I hoped I could visit them. I did find out that Mrs. Grill was still living, but it did not work out to go visit her. The Espelkamp VS personnel consisted of both American and Germans, and for a short time, one from Holland. One who became a friend longer was a young Mennonite, Hans Varkentin, who had been leaving the USSR with his mother and siblings when the German army was retreating from Russia and caught up with them. He was 16 and was pressed into service with the army. He was captured by the Russian army and spent several years as a prisoner of war in the Caucasian Mountains. When he was released, he found the MCC unit at Gronau, Germany, on the Holland border, which helped refugees find families or papers to help them immigrate to another country. Hans applied to go to Uruguay, and while he waited for MCC to come up with appropriate papers, he would come to Espelkamp to help us. There was more to do there than waiting around in Gronau. He did go to Uruguay, where he married another refugee and had four children. In the late 70s, the family moved back to Germany. We visited them in 1990. Two Lutheran girls were also with us for a while. One had suffered unspeakable things from the invading armies from the east. For her, the doctrine of non-resistance and forgiveness still awaited development. Our church services were mainly attending the Lutheran church on Sunday mornings. Soon after I arrived, a young non-Mennonite refugee also was baptized into the Mennonite church. There were also midweek services at our camp that some of the local people attended. Many of these were elderly. Some had recently come from the east. Near the end of my stay in Germany, MCC started the PAX program. The people who served there did similar things to what we were doing. In Espelkamp, they built four apartment houses along one new street designated for Mennonite refugees. In 1990, when we were there, we visited a large Mennonite church one afternoon, packed full. There were two large choirs in the church. A host told us there were three other Mennonite churches in town. Occasionally, the Americans were invited to MCC retreats at different places. These were usually designed to encourage us to faithfulness in our commitment to serve. Stuff. Pardon? Okay. I did other work while I was over there. I wasn't in Espelkamp all the time. I spent a month helping an international youth camp in Oberath, Germany, near Frankfurt. We worked at cleaning bricks from a destroyed church. Oberath lay between Frankfurt and the anti-aircraft batteries that tried to protect Frankfurt. Allied bombers flew across to knock out the batteries. Many of their bombs were released before they reached the batteries, and consequently, this town was hit very hard. I also spent a month at another MCC unit, a children's home at Vogelsberg near Wiesenburg in Elsass, that is now a part of France again. Some vacation time was spent in various trips to Holland, to Denmark and Sweden and Norway, and a year later to Switzerland, Italy, and Austria. The northern trips were very scenic. They were also, we encountered many more mosquitoes there than we did on the southern trip. And I recall one night, because of the mosquitoes, I moved into the car, and at 2 o'clock, I wrote a letter to Lizzie by daylight, two o'clock midnight, near midnight. The next year, I traveled alone to Switzerland, Italy, and Austria. The trip north were made in a car by four MCC boys. And the next year, I traveled by myself and went through to the south. Some points of interest would have been the cathedral at Milan, the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Near its top, by the way, I met an American couple from St. Paul, Minnesota, and we thought we were nearly neighbors at home. I also met some Austrian girls on the train who were traveling from England. I probably would not remember them, except that when we came to Rome, we decided to have supper together, and I found I did not have enough Italian money. They promptly loaned me some. I fully intended to pay them back the next morning, but found that they had taken an early train out of town, and I never saw them again. Rome had many things of historical value: cathedrals, the Colosseum, the Appian Way. I walked on the same road that the Apostle Paul likely walked as he was taken from Rome to Rome as a prisoner. I walked out to the catacombs that were underground excavations where many Christians hid in times of persecution. Naples was not so interesting to me. I saw the excavations of Pompeii, which was nearby, and which was covered. The town was covered by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in AD 69. Florence was a city of museums. Venice was a city of canals and canals for streets, and one took a canal boat or walked the sidewalks. I had intended to travel through Austria on Saturday into Germany, but when I got to the German border, the official on the train discovered that my visa in my passport had expired. I found it had already been expired before I had started on this trip, but no other official mentioned it. There was nothing for me to do but return to Innsbruck in Austria and wait for Monday morning when I could go to the American embassy to open, to stamp my passport properly. Well, my time for my European sojourn was coming to an end. Henry Miller of Kelowna, or near Kelowna, came to take my place, and along with several other MCC workers, on the English ship Queen Elizabeth, we returned to the United States.
Well, our experiences were quite different. His was much farther from home and very rich in history. I really appreciated that, as I did Dan Trogg's account some time ago. I was asked to particularly zero in on the Puerto Rico experience, which was my voluntary service experience. But in order to come to that, I think I should give kind of a sketch of my life before that time, because I think it was important in my decision to go to voluntary service. Of course, at that time, there was no Amish Mennonite Aid. There was no MIC, Mission Interest Committee. There were no choice books. And so Henry and I and some other, we chose other avenues to go to voluntary service. I know that my twin brother and Fred Nisley and some others went to on cattle boat and trips taking cattle across to under the Brethren unit. And of course, like I said, we didn't have as many choices as VSers do today. I thought maybe I would give kind of a sketch of my life. Actually, remember that the Puerto Rico experience was 62 years ago. And when after I got this assignment, I started making some notes. And I think some of you older ones will remember some incidents that should have been included that I perhaps didn't remember. Anyway, for the sake of those that haven't lived here long and the younger ones, I might just say that I give a little sketch of my early life, because it'll be from, I aim to tell you about my start up to the age of 24 or so when we came back from Puerto Rico. I was born on August the 7th in 1925, and then in 1926, I was stricken with what they called infantile paralysis, which was later called polio. That's what everybody calls it today. Paralysis indicating that I was paralyzed, which I was very fortunate, because most of those that got infantile paralysis were paralyzed much more seriously. I was only paralyzed on my right side from my right leg. And then my parents, they wanted to do what they could, so in those next short while, they decided to take me to St. Louis and took me to a sanatorium there, and for 4 weeks we were there. And I don't remember much of that, and I wish very much that we'd have more history. In fact, I really like this idea of sharing of our journeys, because time marches on and our memory doesn't improve. Anyway, then they decided to get me some leg braces, and so I had a leg brace for the first few years until the Depression came, and I was rough on braces and broke them, and they couldn't hardly afford to get them fixed, so they decided to give me crutches temporarily. Well, this temporarily lasted from the age of 5 to 16. They didn't... they were very busy, and we had a large family. By the way, I was fourth. Harry and I were fourth and fifth in our family of 12. And just as a sidelight, I think we've been most fortunate that us 12 children have been able to get together. We're all over 70 now, and over half of us are over 80. But anyway, back to my story. I went through grade school on crutches, had a good time like the rest, even got to play basketball with one crutch under my arm, and I enjoyed life very much. But when I got to be about 16, my parents said, "Ah, this we got to see what we can do. So they looked around and they found out that Kansas Crippled Children Commission would be helping if asked. And so they took me to an orthopedic surgeon in Wichita. And by the way, the fellow that took me was a fellow from town, a businessman who had been was married to a Schrock girl from the Sterling Mennonite Church. And they decided that because my leg by that time was crooked because I hadn't been using it like most people, they decided they would take two operations. One was a tendon lengthening. The other was breaking the bone in two and trimming some off and putting it down and putting it in a cast. And so I spent 3 months at the Wesley Hospital in Wichita. That was four different stays, which was a growing experience, a good experience for me. And then, of course, I helped on the farm from the age of from grade school till I was 21. We came of age at 21. But in the meantime, my twin brother Harry and David, who is 2 years younger, they were drafted into CPS, which Henry already explained. And I really felt very much left out, and I wanted to do something worthwhile, and I was interested in their experiences, which were very varied and interesting to me. And so I wondered what I could do. And about that time, Elmer Gingrich, who was an Amish boy from Hartville, Ohio, came and gave us a report on the work in Puerto Rico. Now, the work in Puerto Rico started in 1943, and Elmer was one of the first ones to serve down there. And he was visiting here, and he gave an interesting account. And so as I wrote to MCC, sat down and wrote a letter in longhand to MCC, and I said I'd be interested in serving if there's something I can do, and I would have an interest in Puerto Rico if there happened to be something there. So when it came to Akron, Joe Beiler, who was the head honcho there, was in Puerto Rico. So they sent the letter to Puerto Rico right away, and gave it, and Joe read it, and then he gave it to Melman Lauber, who was the director of the unit there, and he said, "Read this." So he read my letter, and he said, Joe asked Melman, "What do you think?" He said, "I think we have a place for him right now." He said that Stucky boy from Mound Ridge, Kansas, who is cooking, he's going to be through in a few months. And so the light was green, not a lot of investigation. And the fore part of 47, why I was on a went to Akron for orientation, which was quite an experience for this green farm boy from the farm without an education. Anyhow, I remember the nice little chat I had with Ori Miller, who was the head honcho. I think he kind of felt sorry for me and all my inexperience and what I would have ahead. Anyhow, left Newark. They took us to Newark, New Jersey to fly to San Juan. And they took us in a former Army plane, which was kind of remodeled to make a passenger plane out of it. But as we got into the air, they ran into a storm. So I was thinking, and I remember plainly how I thought to myself, well, if I was on a pleasure trip, I'd have something to worry about. But since this is for a good cause, I'll leave it up to the Lord. And anyway, after the storm, kind of went through the storm while they headed for Puerto Rico. Now, Puerto Rico, I don't know how many of you know much about Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico is an island 35 miles wide and 100 miles long, southeast of Miami, Florida, about 1,000 miles. And it's a very nice island. Anyway, when I went there, by the way, the unit I joined, I think, had about 45 members, and the program was, there were four parts to the program. Well, I should go back to Puerto Rico. Well, Puerto Rico, you know, is a possession of the United States. They use our money, but of course the language is Spanish. And the value of a VS assignment in another country is the education you get. It may not be a formal education, but it's an education all its own in a different culture. And other cultures have qualities that we don't have, and we have qualities they don't have, and you appreciate your own good culture as part of your culture better, but you also see that other people have a lot to offer you. Well, anyway, the program in Puerto Rico was four phases. I told you that the CPS boys went in 43, and they didn't have a minister. So they had Sunday school, and they had a lot of good connections in the community, but they didn't have a preacher until just a month after I got there. Well, Lester Hershey came, and he was the son of T.K. Hershey, who had been one of the first missionaries to Argentina. So he knew the Spanish as well as he knew the English, and that was really good for the program. And so there was the different programs were the medical program. There was a clinic there and a small hospital, and then, of course, they needed cooks. They had a kitchen that cooked for the unit and also for the hospital. And then there was the community program, where they actually had a community building, and they had a slab with goals at each end and a volleyball place to play volleyball. And they had a unit member in charge to plan this for the young people in the area. And, of course, we were in the valley with mountains all around. And they needed some supervised activity. So that was one of the community program. And then there was the agricultural program, where they had several cows. They had planted some pineapple. They had ordered chicks from Mennonite hatchermen from Virginia. And then they would sell these chicks, 25 or 50, to a local fellow. And they would keep track of this, and then they'd raise these chickens and sell them and make a little money. But the most important part, of course, was the Sunday school work, the church work. And I, of course, the first term I didn't know enough Spanish to help, but the second term I had the privilege of teaching a boys' class in Sunday school. Did I forget something? Oh, the sewing project. Judy worked in the sewing project. By the way, I was there two terms. They had terms of a year and a half. And so my first year and a half was about up, why Dr. Hertzler, he was the medical director, he came around and he said, would you consider coming back and being receptionist in the clinic and doing the bookwork for the clinic? Bookkeeping. So that sounded pretty good. Anyhow, I went home, and I'd been writing to Judy. I had met her when I was 19. But I was telling myself that I don't want to get married till I'm about 27, because I want to do a lot of traveling and get some good experiences so I can have a better home. Well, of course, that didn't quite hold out, because 4 years seemed long enough. So we got married, and we went back together, and were there a year and a half. And she worked in the sewing project with Evelyn Good from Illinois, who had been there longer, and she, of course, was in charge and a very good person to work with. Judy has said that she enjoyed every day of that, which was really a plus. But anyway, we've been joking about that sometimes since, saying that we had a year and a half honeymoon in the tropics. I think it's very nice for couples to go together, and especially if it's on an island where there are a lot of flowering trees and it never gets cold. And the coldest it ever got in Puerto Rico was 49 degrees, and we thought we were about freezing because our blood was so thin, you know. But the days were nice, often we had showers, and then it cleared off, and the sun was shining the same day, you know. Where are we on time? I thought I'd like to, by the way, for other Amish young people that were there, there were five there when Judy and I were there. There was one from Indiana who was an uncle to Mark Nisler here, and there was one from Pennsylvania, Ezra Peachy, whom many of you know. And then there was, by the way, Adona Nisler, if some of you perhaps knew Adona. He was from Napanee, Indiana. And then the other one was Mabel Miller from Ohio. She was a dietitian and made a real contribution there. I would like to give a few of the highlights of my being down there as I remember them. One that wasn't a very pleasant highlight was the first term down there. I went with some boys with a pickup to the beach, and we really enjoyed it. Had a nice time. Came home with terrible sunburns, and we really suffered for our fun. But on the serious side, when I got down there, why the receptionist for the clinic wasn't quite finished with her term, and so for 6 weeks I was circulating orderly in the operating room. And one of the operations that I particularly remember is Dr. Troyer. He was kind of a specialist on cataract operations, and I helped with that. I mean, I was just an orderly, and that was kind of a new experience. But the one I remember best was the amputation. This fellow had a terrible ulcer on his foot, and the doctors decided it should come off. So here I was holding this foot, and all of a sudden, when the bone was sawed in two, I had it in my hands, and it was loose. Well, that was bad enough, but it's kind of unusual to go and have to take it out. We didn't have the disposal system. We didn't have Nisley Brothers there. So I had to bury the foot out in the patch at back of the buildings later. Another experience I remember is they had a station where they had services for a small group up in the mountains. And there were two missionaries from a neighboring town that would come from the other way with their vehicle for it, and then some of us would ride by horseback for the service. So Francisco Rolón, he was a fellow I worked with in the kitchen, and I went horseback because it was a shortcut up the mountainside, and of course it was daylight when we went. That wasn't quite so bad, but when we got there, Francisco, he always liked to have part in a program, and he said, I think we ought to have a duet. He wanted to sing a duet with me. Well, I thought this would surely be the place to do it. Now, he couldn't carry a tune, but he sang monotone, but he enjoyed singing. And I did, too. We sang together, and you know, we got compliments after the service, and they even wanted us to sing again. Anyway, I think the Lord used that in spite of our inadequacy. One of the things that I really appreciated is it wasn't all work. Their program in the church there was a Christian endeavor for the young folks on Friday night. And of course, the Americans had their midweek service, and every unit member was supposed to take his turn in having a topic. And then, of course, on Sunday evening, there was a service, Sunday morning and Sunday evening. So that was kind of a stretch. And by the way, it just takes about 6 months to get a working knowledge of Spanish, because that's not difficult, like the Middle East languages or the Far East, which is much harder yet. But it's well worth the struggle. I remember how shocked I was when I found out that each verb has over 70 conjugations. And of course, we didn't study the grammar much. We studied took the practical route and learned from the natives, and had a, for a short time we had a Spanish class, but it wasn't, we didn't have a lot of formal training. The other thing that was so new for me was to travel that far from home, which wasn't nearly as far as Henry went, but went down by air, came back by air. We went down by air, but then when it's time to come home, they said, you have a choice. You can come by on a merchant marine ship for about the same price as by air. I said, let's do it, because I wanted to have that experience of coming on the water. And they stopped to get sugar, one of the islands, but it took longer, but it was well worth it. Now, what am I forgetting here? Well, I think my time is about up anyhow. But anyway, one thing that I thought of as I reviewed, tried to dig up in my memory what took place, was the fact that we have Mennonite Central Committee VS possibilities right here. And right now, Henry and Lizzie and I are all helping at the Etc. shop, which is a thrift shop. And of course, every once in a while, because of a lot of volunteer help there, why, they can send maybe 10,000 or even more at a time to MCC. And of course, while I'm very much in favor of the young people considering voluntary service, there are so many opportunities today. And I don't know whether you've ever thought about it, but you know, our frolics and our helping each other, that's voluntary service. And I think anybody can take part in that. I think that's, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I was a cook in the kitchen the first term. I thought I mentioned that. Any other question? Yes. That, what did I say? I'm sorry. It was 4 months in St. Louis at the sanitarium. Thank you, Edwin. You remember that better than I did. But I had it in my notes as 4 months.
Well, that was very interesting. Does anyone have any questions for, any more quick questions for Perry or Henry here? David.
I might just make one comment. Perry has kept his Spanish very well. The other evening at Walmart, I met a Mexican friend. He met my boss recently. That man talks more Spanish than I
do. There you have it. And he says it's easy. You can learn it in 6 months. Yes. Okay, do you miss 3 weddings in your family when you were in Puerto Rico?
I missed my twin brother's wedding. I had no visitors from home. But one thing that I wish I would have mentioned is the fact, in my experience, when I came home, I had a new appreciation for the community and the church. And I also noticed some things that bothered me more than it ever did, but the good outweighed the bad by a lot. And that's one of the values of being away from the community a while in that kind of environment. Mm-hmm.
I think both of them, maybe without having said it, it enlarged their world views significantly from what they had been from where they left.
I think we do well to remember that there are a lot of people that were in VS quite a while. I think David Yoder were there for 4 years, and in El Salvador, Lowell's were in Nicaragua for 4 years in the recent times. So I hope we can hear from some of the other experiences.
Okay. Malin Wagler and Harry would both have been in foreign work, I mean, in work in relief work in Europe. And at this point, their stories are past personal retrieval, probably, or at least presentation. Yes? Okay. Okay, both of them would have spent some time in Wiesenberg, which is also where Henry worked for a brief time while he was there. Any other questions or comments? Well, I was sitting in the front and didn't realize how the sanctuary had filled, but I'm glad to see you folks that came here, and I'm glad you could be here. Several announcements moving on.